Over two centuries ago, it was England that taxed our tea. Now it's Brussels trying to regulate our companies. Under new European regulations, American businesses face crushing fines, forced disclosures, and foreign red tape that kills jobs here at home. America's laws should be written in America, not Brussels. Reject European regulatory overreach and uphold Trump's trade deal. Paid for by Americans for Limited Government.
Ladies, gentlemen, and bees, this is the ESE Podcast. This is Eat, Sleep, Elite. We are back at it again. More AEW weekly review, breakdown, and discussion, and fucking probably a diabolical crash out 30 minutes in by me. All right, so we're back. Post-pay-per-view, post-John Cena's pay-per-view career, Charlie. What do you think about that? No more premium live events for John Cena. What do you think about that?
Pretty nutty. He's got one match.
We did watch the last match, to be clear. It was good, by the way. I thought Dom and him did a good job.
And it looks like, I mean, all signs have pointed to it being Gunther that he's facing last. So, could be pretty awesome.
Yeah, it could potentially be really interesting. I am, I've always been a fan of John Cena. Obviously, we're big Peacemaker fans here. Big fans of John Cena in general. It's an end of an era, truly, in wrestling when he's going to be gone, you know? You say that about a lot of people, but I mean, when you think of John Cena, you think of, like, wrestling for, like, the last couple decades, right? You know, like, or at least maybe the couple decades before that, like 2000 to 2015. That was the John Cena era, you know? Like, and that is going to be a large chunk of wrestling history that when we talk about, we may have to come up with, like, post the new generation the modern era, but they have a funky name for it that's, like, halfway between, like, fucking PG and not PG, whatever. Anyway.
Find it a coincidence that John Cena and Hiroshi Tanahashi are retiring within a month of each other.
They are 1A and 1B.
It is the definitive end of an era in wrestling.
It truly is. And yeah, so I wanted to make note of that. This, obviously, we have some significant wrestling retirements happening this year. You know, Japan, John Cena, and John Cena, you know what I mean? So, like, it's going to be an interesting landscape for wrestling, you know, because I feel like this is kind of like the landscape we were in when The Rock had been, like, questionably whether he was gone or not gone, you know? I mean, I would think everybody knows at this point he may come back for another match at some point, maybe, but probably he's done, right? I mean, he's mostly done, at least for full-time runs. And that's where we're at with John Cena now. So I fully expect them to really deliver in the last match. I don't see why they wouldn't. Just what a career. But that being said, let's get into some actual AEW stuff here, Charlie. It was an interesting week. Obviously, we had pay-per-view shit, and we had fallout from said, and we had really a lot that went on since the last time we did a proper show. So, I mean, before we get into everything, Charlie, I mean, where are you at right now? Are you, like, optimistic? Are you down on some stuff? You know, what is your just, like, kind of general thoughts right now? Like, are you chilling?
I'm
waiting
so
to see what they do?
Glad we've arrived at the C2. It's easily some of the best time on AEW. And I think they opened up with some absolute bangers. So they were smart about opening it the way they did. But yeah, that's kind of my vibe right now is we're that last stretch, that last month. December is usually a pretty great month for AEW traditionally. So yeah. How about yourself there, Squire?
I was just looking and on my letterbox, I think I saw 10 new movies in the month of November. Fucking nuts. But, like, and by new, I mean new to me. Not all of them were from this year, but, like, 8 of them were, I think, which is kind of crazy. But anyway, that aside, so I'm a little bit all over the place mentally. I'm kind of, like, honestly, the amount of stuff that I've been, like, watching and we've been reviewing lately, I've kind of just been, like, I have to like almost have like brain settings where I like I just reset the settings for certain things, because like for wrestling it's like a completely different vibe, I feel like. So but I'm happy with the C2 right now. I mean, it's actually kind of a perfect transition into our favorites here in a second. It won't be an immediate transition. There'll be a little bit of a buffer zone because we do have favorites from 2 weeks ago, I guess it is now technically, but because you'll be probably watching this before Dynamite if you are one of our fans that does so. But yeah, so I will just briefly talk about last week, which there was some stuff, but you know, we'll obviously get more into that as we we won't get into that last week. There was a lot of stuff there though, and some of it was solid. I mean, it's a go home show. There's gonna be some stuff on it. I really like Tony and Mina taking on Alex Windsor and Riho in the tournament semifinals. It is a lot of good stuff. It's not like a lot to talk about here. I will say this tournament to me though, like I have to say, I maybe I'm completely fucking off base on this, and I'll just toss it right to you after I kind of toss this idea out here, Charlie. But like, it feels to me like they drug their feet with this tournament just a little bit too long, and now the C2 is kind of the more interesting tournament happening right now, and like you stick this in between, like all the stuff leading up to the pay-per-view, and it just kind of illustrates to me what happens when this is not a pay-per-view angle, this tournament. It should have been ending at a pay-per-view. I mean, really, if we're being honest. Like a lot of other tournaments do, even tournaments for active championships, you know? So it's like, I wonder if there was just a weird decision made to not have this be like as central on AEW television because of the incoming C2. And if that's the case, that's really sad for the women, because I feel like their tournament deserved to breathe, man. It deserved to have its time and finish before other stuff started really kicking off. And I'm not saying that we should have like held the C2 past when it normally starts. I don't think that's the case, actually. What I'm saying is we maybe should have started the women's tag tournament sooner, so that it could finish in time to not like be overshadowed by this. And maybe that's just my like sexist ass wrestling fan interpretation of like, oh, the women are going to get overshadowed by this tournament, right?
Well, the problem is we still don't even know where the finals is taking place. We don't have an idea of the date.
And if that's going to be like a month out, then what the fuck are they going to do with that month while they have the C2 going on in the background? I mean, if that's going to be, I mean, you could write a show with that as like one of the things, but is it going to work every episode? Are we going to do that Dynamite and Collision every week? And that's going to be the in-between segments between the C2 and various Don Callis and Young Bucks and Kenny rumblings. Like, that can work. I just feel like they're being put in the backseat. That's what it feels like to me, and that's fucking unfortunate.
Well, you know, we kind of called this, because one of the big things we said when they first announced the tournament was, are they still going to keep doing the one women's per show? If so, chances are we'll feel repercussions from that. And guess what? This was a round one matchup that you're talking about as your favorite here. It's a round one matchup. We're in December. I know technically this happened before December,
yeah,
but
right.
That doesn't deflate the
well,
fact that we're
thing.
Finally
like,
talking
this
about
this match
it.
Got delayed for whatever fucking reason. I don't know why, but like they couldn't have this match for whatever reason. I don't know what the reason was, but
the
clearly.
One match a week. It's crazy. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I mean, I kind of figured that the writing was on the wall with that. I was really hoping to be wrong. But that's what happens. So, you know, and then there's even some more stuff about certain teams losing and what that's doing. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think we kind of saw this coming, and now it's already wondering if Duke, I can't believe we don't have a date for the finals as of December 2nd.
I know, right?
We don't have a date for the finals. That's ridiculous, dude. That is for a company like AEW, that is so thorough with planning out their fucking dates, for this to be the scenario for, of course, the new women's title. Even the TBS title had some fucking dates planned to it, and they really went all out with it, right?
Yeah.
That ROH Women's Pure Championship has been going on since fucking April, dude. That tournament's been going on since April.
No, they drag their fucking feet on these tournaments, and I don't fucking know why. I don't get it. The C2 feels like it has momentum. Like, whatever.
It's unfortunate, but I think I hate to already say this. Doesn't this already kind of feel like,
yeah, no,
this is the plan with these titles? This is how much care is going to be done?
Yes, that's exactly what I think at this point.
Can you possibly have 8 fucking titles? 9 titles on a 4
hours
of television?
I mean, like, yeah, I mean, no, I mean, I think this is all, he has said this again, when asked about it recently about the titles, that they're adding more hours of television. That is the plan. So, I mean, hours of programming, he said. So that would imply to me television, because why else would you need championships if it was just going to be like a TV show, right? Like, it's like not wrestling. So,
yeah.
At this point, they're probably going to be television fucking tag titles, basically. As much as I hate to say it, you know? Which
these
is, by
titles,
the way, what they are in WWE.
If these titles get one person over, they did its job. But I am so not optimistic right now. I can't believe we didn't crown champions of Full Gear. That's straight up where I'm at.
That's where I'm mind blown. Like, I thought for sure that's where we were headed. And then I realized, oh, we're not even close to the end of the tournament on this yet. It feels like this tournament has been so irrelevant. It felt like there were weeks where it didn't happen. And I know there were weeks where it did happen, because we've had at least one match a week. So, that should just say everything right there. So, I know this is supposed to be one of my favorites. I mean, I did like the match, but like the tournament itself, I mean, I guess is a weird way to put it, is if I was able to take the tournament as a favorite, I wouldn't be, but the match itself can be fine inside of that, you know? So,
yeah.
I'll just jump over to what I actually liked from
the
this
best
week,
part
though.
Of the match. Yeah. I mean, just that opening really beginning with Mina and Rhea was really, really good. It was really solid. So
yeah, maybe they could have a series of matches. We haven't done a best of seven in a while, and we know he loves his Joshi, and none of their other partners probably aren't doing anything for a while. So maybe they can just have like a tag feud where they're doing. Have we ever done that in AEW? Have like two tag teams feud each other with two singles wrestlers each in them, and they just both have singles feuds at the same time and have tag matches throughout?
To an extent that
we did with Britt Baker back in the day with Jamie,
that
right?
Thunderstorm tag team essentially kind of was a variant.
We could do that again.
That.
I'd be super down with that. You know, like we could do that. It would work. It gives them something to do on TV, because neither of them are going to win the goddamn titles, in my opinion. So, you know, like, whatever. All right. Protostar Kyle Fletcher took on Kazuchika Okada in the Gold League. And this was one of your instant holy shit chance type matches. And man, did they fucking deliver. You know what? Like, I love both of these guys. They do exactly what you would expect them to do. But then, like, they do it in a way where you're like, all right, fucking these assholes know exactly what they're fucking doing. And a perfect example of that is, like, they did this feeling out process, and like we watched like probably over 1,000 matches on this show, at least at this point, right? It's got to be up there, right? Like, so, but definitely in our careers as wrestling podcasters, over 1,000 matches at this point. So we've seen a lot of feeling out processes, you know, like we know what that looks like, and we know when it can look kind of awkward and kind of like, this was like a completely different version of that. It was like almost like we've seen tete-a-tete, you know, like the I can do that better than you in wrestling before. And we've even seen that in feeling out process. But it was almost like they like somehow like, I don't know, like threw them in like a fucking like DNA scrambler. And it came out as one, you know, combination of fucking both versions of a feeling out process. You know, like they managed to like do a tete-a-tete feeling out, which again, like I said, we've seen that before. I don't think we've seen it like this. And I think it's because obviously Okada is purely one of the best like actual in-ring performers in the world. And people just forget that sometimes. Like, he can match with anybody. And then, Kyle Fletcher, I don't know if he's, like, in top five in the world, right? Right now. Maybe one day. But right now, there's just so many really good wrestlers out there, right? It's just, like, I don't know if I could say in-ring. He's really fucking talented, right? But, like, I don't know. That's such a subjective question, right? Like, is he in the top? He's certainly in the conversation, I would say, right? At least in AEW at the very minimum. But, like, there's just so many really good wrestlers out there. It's just hard to say, right? But we all can identify that as probably the strongest part of his game. He's very good on the mic, but that's definitely, in the ring, he's fucking unbelievable, right? So you combine that with somebody like Okada, and of course it's going to come out with something pretty, pretty glorious. You know what I mean?
In that ESPN top 30 wrestlers under 30, Kyle was listed at number 2 this year. So.
Okay. So at least for younger wrestlers, he would be a top 5 in-ring performer, for sure. You know what I mean? Under
the
30s.
Only one ahead of him was Dominic Mysterio.
Given what we saw him do on fucking that pay-per-view.
Kind of hard to compare it to that, because that kid is so far.
Well, yeah, he's won multiple. I mean, our guy's won a single championship, but, you know, he's done a little bit more, I would say. And he's been a main eventer over there. And I would argue Dominic is on his way, especially after facing John Cena to being a main eventer. You know, like, not that Kyle's not, but I think Kyle's just a few steps behind on that path, you know, if we're being honest, you know, because Kyle's just, he's doing his thing, you know what I mean? And I'm not taking anything away from Kyle when I say that. It's just, we all know that Dom's been pushed to the moon for a couple of years now, and Kyle's getting there, you know, in terms of being pushed to the moon, but it's just been a longer time for him. It's the only way you could put it. I just think they put it all out there in this one. It was a really good match. Many big time moves. There was like Rainmakers, Michinoku Driver of Doom that was hit at one point. And I think the biggest fucking thing, obviously, that is the massive takeaway here is Kyle fucking Fletcher beat Kazuchika Okada clean as a whistle, Charlie. And one, I mean, A, biggest win in Kyle's fucking entire career. Not even close, you know what I mean? And I mean, does this make Kyle the favorite going forward, Charlie? Because he beats fucking Okada in the tournament with his title on the line. I mean, Jesus Christ. So yeah. Let me know what you're thinking about this, Charlie, because I fucking thought this match was an absolute blast. I thought, you know, it's everything you want it to be on paper. But then Okada, yeah, he's got that little extra element to him where he just fucking knows how to do these things right. I would not put it past his Okada facial reactions like, I'm putting this kid over. I don't care. You know, like,
yeah, his facial reactions were so good again in this match. This was really, really a great match and the perfect way to open the tournament, to be honest. So, yeah, I loved it. I think it's easily right now match of the tournament. And it's expected with these two almost to a degree with how great they are. So, yeah, no, I love this. I love the fact that Okada was a little too overconfident in Kyle Fletcher as the kind of wrestler now that, well, knows how to take advantage of that. So, really good stuff. Great finish. And Kyle Fletcher lost the TNT title.
How many times are we going to see Kyle in this position in this tournament, by the way, with how much he's come along? Because, like, let's be real. There's some other people in this tournament I think Kyle looks like this against. You know what I mean? Like, at this point?
Yeah, very well.
Because now it's all killers, but I think there are matches that Kyle, you have win definitively in this tournament that are in this league, and I think you have him beat these people like very, very well. Like, I almost want this to go New Japan Super Junior style, dude, where like everybody has a fucking shot for a little bit, you know? Like, it doesn't feel like that all the time.
That's the best way to do it. I would love to really stretch that out if we could. So, all right. Let's jump into my favoritos. And last week, we're jumping to Dynamite as well with Sky Flight, Dante, Darius, and Scorpio Sky versus Josh Alexander and the Young Bucks. In a very odd Dynamite, you know, I'm glad we don't have to talk about that opening. What the fuck? But in a very odd Dynamite, I think this match, again, gave us our party flavor. Yeah, sometimes maybe we are suckers to picking these party matches, but sometimes they stick out again in a great way, and it's just another further example of, I thought, getting our last hoorah of Josh and the Bucks before that, you know, the pay-per-view match. Just another one of their great trios matches with these guys. I imagine Josh Alexander is someone that they've wanted to have in their company for a long time, and they took every advantage of that they could and kept facing guys that they love facing. So, made all the sense in the world. Fun match. Low stakes. Just a good party time. And, yeah, I thought Scorpio Sky might have been injured here. Keep an eye on that. But, yeah.
That would be fucking KO for his fucking career, probably. I mean, I said that last time, though, so I you know, hit it back. Is, you know, it's...
and Duke, I'm gonna go as far as to say this. Fucking MVP of the match? Dante Martin.
I mean, yeah, the guy hasn't been on TV in like a fucking month, so, it feels like. So, of course he's going to go out there.
We're going to talk about taking an opportunity and running with it. Let's see what happens from that, because Dante Martin kicked ass in this match yet again. So, that was my favorite from last.
They just need to have some balls and put Dante in the fucking C2, dude. That's what they need to do.
That would have been cool. Let's jump to my favorite for this week. And the other match.
I changed my mind. Send Dante to the Super Juniors.
He'd be a great fit.
Guy, what are you
doing? Dynamite had some fantastic C2 matches, and no coincidence here that both of our favorites come from the tournament. I am going to be picking today Darby Allin versus Kevin Knight. Okay, so this was a very, very good match. Talk about Darby Allin kind of being the television wrestler, the MVP of TV wrestling, because he doesn't give a fuck and he does stuff that you can't believe someone's doing. So Kevin Knight just showed off some unbelievable athleticism in this match yet again, and I thought Darby did a really good job putting him over. There was a drop kick off the entrance ramp that was so sick. So many great near falls. Well, Darby's still, you know, selling the goddamn burns. Awesome stuff. Very easy to pick as a favorite for this week. And I think, Duke, it's really highlighting Kevin Knight I mean, good God here, man. Picking up a victory clean as a sheet over Darby Allin. Great way to start the tournament for him. And that 30 wrestlers under 30, he's going to be on it next year. You can fucking count your cookies on that. Yeah. So, yeah, he's amazing. And I think this is a great way to start the tournament for him. These guys have great chemistry, and Darby and Kevin are both one for one. What did you think of this awesome match?
Yeah, so it was a really good match. I took a couple of interesting notes in this one that I don't know how much they're going to play out, but I always like to do this at the beginning of these, you know, C2 when they're, you know, planting seeds, if you will. And one of the things that they did in this match was they planted the seed of Darby's knee being like kind of like fucked up early in the match and him kind of having to play around that, which obviously really works for Darby's sensibility as a wrestler, the whole, you know, David versus Goliath, you know, the wrestling from behind sort of mentality, if you will. And, Kevin, I think, super cooked. There was this one fucking little spot where he was like, psych, gotcha, fucking back suplex off the top rope, basically. And because Darby was going up to hit a coffin drop, I think, and he was just like, nah, bitch, I'm getting up there, yoink. Fucking put his ass to the dirt. Yeah, I mean, I really, like, enjoyed what they did here. I think, obviously, I mean, if I had to be honest, like, the Cold League is off to a fucking hot start this year, you know, like.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know, like, Dynamite really put the fucking... put it out there, you know. But I guess it's my thing, like, do you think that knee injury, I guess is this New Japan, are we having injuries play across the tournament, or are they forgetting about that next week? Like, I guess this is my question, because we could go either way, I feel like, right? You know,
I think they'll play into it, especially if the plan is to not have Darby Allin advance. That'll be a way of protecting him.
It could also be a way of selling his story too, like, though he's working through this knee injury, he's still burned, and he's, you know, he's making it to the finals. Like, yeah. That could be a story that we play with. And that's the same thing we always say in Super Juniors, just because you get that early injury. I want to say, well, with somebody who got, like, fucked up early in a match because Taiji Ishimori last year decided to fuck somebody up in the middle of a match because he just didn't, he wasn't winning, but he just wanted to hurt them. And that cost them, but it didn't cost them until much later, you know what I mean? They still looked like they had a strong chance. So I wonder if it's one of those situations where, like, they'll, like, in the matches going forward, they'll be like, well, maybe watch out for that knee injury. I'm sure everyone else is looking at it, so we're showing you. And then, I don't know, maybe it's just thinking a little too much about it, but either way. I really did enjoy this one, though. I mean,
yeah.
I thought on paper this looked pretty good, but I was just like, I mean, you know, Kevin Knight is kind of in a weird spot because I don't know how he's going to do in this tournament. Like, in New Japan tournaments, he's started off looking very strong and then gone.
Well, this will down. Put some confidence in him. This will put some good stock in him at least. This is a big and then win.
In other tournaments, we've seen him start kind of low. Like this past tournament, he started off, like, I think 0-2, I want to say, in the juniors, and ended up going like, I don't know, 5 winning streak or something like that, I think. And ended up not making it because of records, because I think someone or 2 people or something like that went undefeated or something like that, or close to. But, like, you know, so we could see him go either way and it'll work. I guess I'm really just kind of letting this part of the tournament play itself out because, I mean, there's so many stories that are going to play out throughout this, and we're just getting little bits of them right now. I mean,
yeah.
I think it's easy to say, though, anyone who wins their first match has got to be a favorite going forward, you know,
off
at least
to a
for now.
Great start, especially. Okay. Well, let's jump into news. We've got a little bit of stuff to talk about this week. We got some good stuff here. We got the date and location for Revolution 2020. We're going back to Los Angeles with that beautiful, beautiful fucking coloring that they did last year at the Crypto.com Arena, formerly known as the Staples Center. So Tony Khan put us up there. So March 15th for Revolution. Good stuff there.
I mean, always look for some California-based contenders for championships going there at that
could
point. So start planting seeds, mm-hmm. You know?
It'd be a big show.
Is that where we do Bucks versus FTR again? Is that it? I mean, it's LA.
Probably
it's
wrestle
not,
4 times before then. Who are we kidding?
It's not Rancho Cucamonga, but it's pretty close, you know? Like,
AEW has another, a new wrestler signed. So add this, probably our last one of the year. And that is Lacey Lane has inked a deal after her debut match with TBS champion Mercedes Moné. And yeah, she's done 2 Ring of Honor matches since. And she is officially signed to AEW. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, she's won tag titles a bunch. She looked really good in that match with Mercedes. So, yeah, I'm down.
Especially inevitably you're going to have to add some people for this women's division to even work remotely. Even if it's just going to be the bullshit version that we're not going to be the biggest fan of, if it's going to work, it's going to need bodies, you know? So not that that's what she's being brought in for. She was really good when we saw her, but
there's going to be a lot of contracts coming up in 2026.
Mm-hmm. We might get some of those stragglers from NXT Black or not Black and Gold.
Well, and I think there's going to be even more turnover than this year and last year.
It could be.
We're getting to that point now where a lot of these 2022, 2023 contracts will be coming up. So you're going to see a lot of turnover in this next year. So just to be expected, you're going to bring people in, you know, give you still some depth so you're not just putting new faces on TV every week, even though that does work.
Yeah.
Okay, so we kind of got a little bit of a Meltzer update here talking about how AEW plans to use Kenny Omega right now. And long story short, they're trying to avoid putting him in long singles matches. And that may be a part of the reason why they put him back with the Young Bucks. You know, maybe there's a little more to that. But yeah, they're trying to just maybe weigh out that we're not going to do the 60-minute fucking one-on-one matches anymore. And you can go back to an interview Kenny Omega had a month ago where he said, I would like to be in a situation where I left the ring not having any regrets and not feeling embarrassed or that I tarnished my reputation. So I'd like to leave while I still have some semblance of athleticism left in my body. It all kind of makes sense, Duke. I mean,
yeah,
Kenny Omega,
when he says it like that, it makes you realize he's probably done in the next couple of years then. Because I'm not saying he looks worse now, but this can't be sustainable for...
That's why
if it's this bad, if it's to the point where he can't have those 60-minute matches without leaving with a fear that he's going to be fucked, you know, like...
The Gabe Kidd might have been our last epic.
And that might have been why they went so hard in that.
And you know what?
Match,
if it is,
you know?
If that is his last, you know, quote unquote New Japan epic, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was a perfect match. It was a perfect fucking
match. It was everything you wanted it to be on his return, and probably is the reason why they're not doing that going forward. Because after that match, we didn't see him for a while, you know? And we were like, why? He probably wasn't okay. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, so let him do this. He can do what he wants to do in a short amount of time. Of course, there's still injury risk doing that, but...
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Let's just keep it nice
and easy.
Minimize
it as much as you can, though. That's the way I look at it.
That's what I keep
right?
pointing to, man. Like, I think by 2027, when we're doing the awards show this year, we'll really talk about this going into 2026. There's a lot of people that are going to be on their last year, most likely, of full-time wrestling. We know FT, they're done after next year's their last year. Kenny Omega... He's leaning to being done. The Young Bucks. Guys, these people aren't going to be wrestling.
Sticking around a super long time after Kenny is gone.
No, at least not showing up every week on television.
They might become part-timers at that point, yeah. Like they,
so
I mean, they were
I think
you're
going to go into 2027.
We kind of already saw what that looked like last year when Kenny was hurt for a long extended period of time, and they also took a long period of time off as well. You know what I mean? So
because they've mentioned, too, that they're not going to wrestle forever.
No.
But that's why they're securing the other stuff around the ring. They have very important positions within the company. And look, we saw Danielson stop this year. It's really, I think, eye-opening to a lot
to
of people,
point,
this
though,
changing of
I
the guard.
I need to, from Tony Khan next year, see a very strong attempt. I know you're not ever going to be able to replace Kenny Omega. I know you're not going to ever be able to replace the Young Bucks. They're fucking irreplaceable teams. Same with FTR, right? And wrestlers. But you need to make an effort to position teams and position single stars to be able to take over those slots. If you do not, it is going to feel like there is a gaping hole in this show. We have seen what that feels like before.
I think the tag team thing, yes. I think they've done the job with the single stars.
I just think that there's so many injuries at the top level right now. We need some people to be established for when that happens inevitably. Yeah. Like I just think that needs to happen because I feel like Kenny Omega is such a gaping hole in the singles division that it's been there for like the last 3 or 4 years almost, it feels like, that he is like, when he's gone, that's going to open it. Like, it's not just going to like, oh, we're just going to fill that back in with Kyle Fletcher. Like, Kyle's not going to be able to fill those shoes instantly.
No, the only person that has a shot right now is Will Ospreay.
And Will, it can't be Superman forever. He's going to have to do the same thing eventually.
But that's why I think it is important to mention that the big three right now in AEW, being Hangman, Swerve, and Ospreay.
When his teenage kid is, you know, like, fucking, I want him to be able to walk. In general, I just want him to be able to walk. Fuck, I want him to be able to fucking feed himself. You know what I mean? Like, not that I think he's doing anything to his body that would prevent that, but he's a fucking animal, you know? Like,
yeah. They need to figure out this tag thing, though. I mean, they really,
yeah, no, the tag division if they're losing, I mean, those two after next year, if we don't have those, I mean, that's been the entire tag division basically for like the last 5 years.
And you so, just like, lost the Lucha Brothers.
Yep.
Private Party's gone. These are a lot of day one teams that are gone. Private Party most likely.
And thankfully you got Brigido that popped this year. So you got that at least.
That's not gonna be, they're not going to be a tag team.
I mean, they implied they would be this week.
They're not going to be. If they're still tagging in 3 months, I'll say I'm shocked. That's not happening.
I think you're going to be saying you're shocked, because I don't we'll think they're just throwing that one away. They had one of the best tag team title runs in the history of the company. That would be ridiculous. So, like,
it works. Bandito's a star.
I agree.
Let him fucking rock in the singles division.
Why can't we have both? Why can't he be a tag team wrestler and a singles wrestler? Why is that banned? I don't understand. Like,
because he's a single star.
But you can be both.
Sure. But when it's time, he's going to be doing the singles thing. He'll wrestle tag matches during the week, sure. He'll have his boys. When it gets down to the bottom of the marrow. God, how nice would it be if he's the one that beats Samoa Joe? Holy shit.
That's a pipe dream at this point.
There is...
Joe might not lose this title until fucking April.
Something I do want to mention, and I think while we're in news, it's a good time to bring this up. So, across the pro wrestling landscape right now, world champions. CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, Samoa Joe. You noticed something there.
Kenosuke Takeshita.
No, I'm talking in America. And you can even count Ricky Saints if you want. I don't know if NXT is still holding that ground like it did. But what I'm going to talk about is the main champions here in CM Punk, Cody Rhodes, and Samoa Joe. These guys are all over 40. It makes you wonder.
Shit, Ricky's not that far behind him either.
Yeah, it makes you wonder a little bit right now of what. There was an argument I saw this week, and it was by Brian Alvarez, who I don't normally agree with things he says. Sometimes it just feels like he spews shit to spew, but I thought this one made a lot of sense, and it caught a lot of waves. And it was basically, he was playing this thing of, it feels like these companies are in a race right now to see who they can make the oldest champion possible. Well, I was like, fair enough. And he said what they should be doing is trying to see who they can put the title on that's the youngest guy possible. Let's get some new stars. Let's get some new
blood. This
has not
been based on what I've been saying about, I don't care if it doesn't make sense. Put Kyle with the title. Put fucking... I was even saying when Mark Briscoe was on his rise up after being Ring of Honor World Champion, if they had done that, that guy would be a fucking legend right now. You know what I mean? Like, imagine he beat John Moxley, Charlie. Can you imagine if Mark Briscoe was the one to defeat the fucking Death Riders after all the fucking shit he
put
into
actually doing
that?
Yeah, but he's still over 40. I mean, he's new to AEW. Yes.
Is he really over 40? Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, he looks pretty good for 40, though.
So, it's a weird spot, and it gets you thinking. So, because I often hear... How is Braun Breaker or Dominic Mysterio, if we're talking WWE, how is Kyle Fletcher?
Swerve is the fucking perfect example of this. I know he's getting closer to 30, but he was like 26 when he won the championship, wasn't he?
I think Swerve's significantly older than we're thinking. He's 35 right now.
What?
Yeah. So it gets you wondering.
I mean, that's still better than fucking 40.
AEW's
still.
Core guys are fine right now in terms
Jesus
of...
Jesus Christ.
They got some time. But it does make you
MJF,
wonder, like...
Is MJF truly the only one that we put on that was, like, 26 years old at the time? Like, and that's still not... I mean, if you're talking, like, if he was a football player, that he'd be, like, about to... He'd either be in the NFL or he'd be fucked. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So, like...
I don't know. It's good food for thought, though, because it really gets me thinking. I hope next year...
All right, who would you do it with? I mean, Kyle's the obvious one. Duh. You know?
I'd do with Bandito.
Bandito's 30, dude.
Why not? That's fine. Why not? Do it with Bandito. Do it with someone that is so fucking good they're undeniable. Do it with Kevin Knight.
I was about to say, if you're trying to go for the youngest possible, Bandito is not the option.
WWE's got it a little easier.
He should win the world title, but he's not the fucking youngest guy on the roster. Like,
yeah. WWE, it's slightly easier because Braun Breaker is such an obvious, easy fucking answer that, you know, maybe you could say Kyle Fletcher for an AEW is that easy. I don't know if it is because there is so many other guys that are either on the tier of Kyle Fletcher or right with him, like right under him.
Yeah, no, there's a ton of guys like that.
Whereas Braun Breaker is on such a high level that not really any of these other younger guys can compete with him. They're all older.
I mean, I think that is the plan for them in the Fed eventually. I just don't know if they're there yet, which is weird. I don't know why they haven't.
Well, it makes you wonder, why is this an era in 2025?
They didn't have a problem when Finn was like, I mean, Finn was like 30, I think, at the time.
It's going to be 2026 and Cody Rhodes, Samoa Joe, and CM Punk are world champions. That's insane.
It's tough too.
The Cody one isn't as bad.
Actually,
I'll give
with
you
Cody
that.
And Joe both, it's kind of tough because neither of them won the world titles they probably should have, right? So like Punk is his legacy is secured. He's a fucking Hall of Famer.
It's
right?
just food for thought because I'd like to keep an eye on that as we go into 2026.
Well, I'm just genuinely clear. I would like. I mean, obviously you have Bron Breakker, you have Kyle Fletcher, you have Bandito, you have a couple of guys like maybe
Dominic
you could throw
Mysterio.
It on. Dominic, yeah, I think he would probably be the best option, honestly, like in terms of being over. But, like, I like where Brian is coming from on this Alvarez, right? But, like, I also question, like, you have to have those guys beat somebody, too. You know, like, they can't just beat fucking...
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean,
Jimmy
if you wanted to go
Schmidt
super young...
Fucking, yeah, it has to be a meaningful win.
If you wanted to go super young, and both companies could do this, by the way. You could go with Javon Evans in WWE, who was the former Jay Malachi, who we covered on Dark. We were big fans of him. He's super over in NXT already. He's already in the
Swerve says
roster.
He's better than he was at that age.
There you go. Perfect quote. You could do Javon Evans in WWE, and you could do Nick Wayne in AEW. If you want to go so young that you are guaranteed to fucking disrupt the foundation of the business, there's your answer. There's your answer. And here's the thing. Why not? There's no fucking... The only thing people
we
would say
is... We
whined
on him with MJF. We literally just said, fuck it. This guy's the best wrestler in our company. Yes. He's the best on the mic. He's the best... Well, not in the ring necessarily, but like, he's one of the best in the ring. You know what I mean? Like, and
when
fucking,
it works, it works. And you have to just take the leap of faith to try. That's why New Japan said, fuck it. We're putting the title on an AEW guy. Because at least we know he's young. But because... Think, what have we talked about for the last 3 years of New Japan? They haven't had the fucking testicular fortitude to put it on one of their young guys for some reason. How have they not?
They literally booked a tournament around fucking Kosei Fujita last year that he didn't win with him to win the title.
Yeah. Like, there's so many guys in Japan, you're like, how have they not won it? And then it goes to a guy that's not even theirs. Quote unquote. I mean, technically is New Japan signed. He'll be New Japan in the long run, right? But right now, he's mainly on AEW in 2025.
Right.
It just puts it in perspective of, wow, we need a changing of the guard, and we need it now across every fucking company. Like, I'm fine if this is Cody Rhodes, CM Punk, and Samoa Joe's last title reign. Let's not hand these titles off to guys in their 40s. It's time to move on.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about our last three champions in AEW, too, they're all, I think, 30-plus, so it's like, you know.
That's fine. Like, the Hangman thing's fine. It's fitting, and Moxley,
you
know.
Is it fine? Are we okay with that title reign? I'm not.
Well, the booking sucks. The person winning, it's fine. So, it's one of those things. I'd really like to see where we are at in the landscape following this. I'm assuming all three of these guys are going to lose at around the same time. I really don't know Cody Rhodes booking like the back of my hand. I'm not going to lie to you. But I have a safe assumption right now that at least Punk and Samoa Joe will probably lose it around April, March. So we'll see. Anyways, let's move on. I just wanted to bring that up because that's been on my mind.
Punk losing it at Mania, right? At that point, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
that checks
there
out.
Is a new CMLL World Heavyweight Champion, and he's on AEW's roster. Yes, it is Claudio Castagnoli is the new CMLL World Heavyweight Champion. Tune in tomorrow or today, whenever you guys are watching. Maybe he will have the title with him.
I hope so. God, if anybody deserves to bring their fucking other world championship onto a fucking AEW show, not that other people haven't, but if anybody deserves it, it's fucking Claudio. Because we want to talk about a guy that's been, I mean, yes, I made a comment about Joe and Cody not really getting the shots that they deserved or whatever, but like that's Claudio's entire identity as a wrestler, basically. Not that that's all what he puts out there, but I'm saying, like, if you think about Claudio and like what defines the missing piece of his career that we can all say, it's like he should have won the world title like 5 times in WWE, probably, like, you know, like maybe
easily.
Four, like
easily,
and he probably should have been more times tag team champion than he was, even though he was, I think, 3 maybe, you know. But like, when you're good, you're good, you know. So like, yeah, I mean, shit, he made you like Sheamus and you hate that guy, you know? Like,
I was a certified Sheamus hater, and then I came around. Yep. And now we're even at a point where I'm kind of rooting for Sheamus to get a G1 run before his career's done, said and done with.
Magic of Claudio Castagnoli.
Guys got some, you know, while we're on the topic of other companies, let's hit a couple of these things that came out today involving some AEW stuff and non-AEW stuff. I wanted to mention this. TNA Wrestling is officially a new television home. They've announced a new TV deal with AMC. So they will be carried on the AMC television channel and the streaming service AMC Plus. So it's going to be a lot of wrestlers that are getting more opportunities, more time, more television time. And hey, more wrestlers getting paid, more homes for them to follow. So, and it also sounds like deal is dead with NXT following this. So
I love AMC as a company because I can't make fucking heads or tails of the business decisions that they made.
It seems like they made all that money with The Walking Dead and just fucking have just done whatever they wanted after.
I mean, truly, they probably made so many billions off The Walking Dead, or maybe not even billions, but hundreds of millions at least, that they're probably, y'all are just chilling, right? Like, I mean, like, it seems like they just hire another guy to just waste money every couple of years to be their CEO or whatever. Like, you know, like not every couple, but like if I probably have like 5-10 years or something, probably something like that. They bring in a new guy because they decided that guy wasn't doing it right. But somehow they don't go under, and they got really close, I think, during the pandemic, didn't they? They were like pretty close to actually being cooked. I mean,
the television service? I don't know. The movie thing, yeah.
Well, I'm
the
saying
movie,
like,
the movie thing,
you got
the thing, AMC movie.
That's
got to
be a big revenue driver that keeps, because there's got to be years where they didn't make as much money off The Walking Dead or something else, right? So like they had to have, I would assume their theater component does fund a lot of their other adventures, you know what I mean? Especially when they don't have the success on television some years, I'm sure that they don't, you know, because like think about it, like you have The Walking Dead, which is obviously a massive success. But before then, you had AMC doing shows like Mad Men and fucking, I'm trying to think what the other one is. But there was two shows that were really good. Maybe it was Breaking Bad. I forget which one it was. But they co-produced one of those shows, both a couple of those shows. And they obviously didn't really do much involvement in the actual show production, but they obviously were given credit for that. So, you know, it's like...
Yeah, I believe their owners now are Amazon anyway, so... This will be good for people that'll, if they just have Prime, they'll be able to watch this pretty easily. So
yeah, that's pretty
cool. That works out more wrestling for people, right?
If it's on Prime, I may just randomly throw on a TNA. If the pay-per-views are on there, sure, certainly. I might throw on a fucking pay-per-view at that point. Damn, you know, like, because I don't really care about
how nice would that be if AMC Plus just holds the fucking pay-per-views. So,
wow, that'd be pretty.
This is much better than Access TV. And I think that's good for all of wrestling. Now, if we that little thing of, you know, perhaps that whole deal with NXT and maybe that rumor going around was people in NXT and in WWE really wanted TNA to go Wednesday nights on CW. And it sounds like they pretty much said, nah, fuck you, we're not doing that.
Yeah, we're not killing our show.
It's Thursday night Impact. AEW. It's Thursday night Impact, and it sounds like everything with NXT is done. So we'll see. I don't know. Maybe the first night they'll do some stuff with it, but there's a lot of rumblings going on about that. Again, a lot of the NXT stuff might be rumored.
I suspected this was
going
to be how this ended from the beginning. I never fully expected TNA to just be like, yeah, we're WWE's fucking dumping ground for their people they don't want to put on TV this week. Like, nah, I don't think it's going to work like that. I think if they were ever going to do anything. And look, it worked out in the short term for TNA because they got some of their people featured on WWE fucking pay-per-views and television, you know? So
the main two they got featured have already signed with WWE.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like they that sucks for them, but I mean, it is what it is, you know. Like, they allowed that to happen. That's on them. You know what I mean? Like,
you know who I want to see them give a shot to? Bear Bronson.
That'd be interesting.
Got the shit end of the stick with that tag partner going rogue, beating up his wife.
Yeah, that was fucking insane.
He's been wrestling his ass off on the independent scene. Let's see this guy get a shot. Let's see what he can do.
He was always pretty good in the ring from what I remember, so lock it in. Like, I'll say that about Bear Country. You know, fucking domestic abuse aside, fucking, they were never, the problem with them was never their in-ring ability, you know?
Yeah, no kidding. I wanted to mention this. So this has kind of gone under the radar. At least AEW hasn't mentioned it on TV, and I don't really follow social media stuff as much as I used to. But Megan Bain has been wrestling in Stardom for the last month. She's been doing the Goddess of Stardom tag league, teaming up with Hanako. So, Megan Bain ended up making it to the semifinal match with her partner Hanako. So she's currently wrestling in two tag tournaments, wrestling at the goddamn Blood and Guts, doing all of it. Megan Bain, she's unbelievably talented. And she's even been wrestling some singles matches over there that's been pretty good. And we were able to even tune into one with a couple of twins, 19-year-old twins, Hina and Rina, who looked unbelievably great. And Megan had a good match with them. But I wanted to give some highlights of that Megan Bain has been doing a Stardom tour and crushing it along the way. So, yeah, good for her. I love hearing that that's going on, as well as Lance Archer is currently wrestling in AEW, or in New Japan, in the tag league with Alex Zane. So, yeah. Just wanted to give those two some special shout-outs for doing the thing in the in Japan. So, cool for them. And, yeah. Maybe we see the Hanako partnership make its way to AEW, Duke. I don't know.
I mean, I would be super down. I think the one thing that we haven't gotten so far, we've had a few wrestlers show up, don't get it twisted. We've been in some tournaments for like Forbidden Door and so on. We've had a CMLL, like, basically, I mean, I don't know what you would call it, but they basically had like a partnership directly with us for a while where they were sending a bunch of their guys and we had like a war going on between the two companies and it led into a pay-per-view. I think we could do something like that with the Stardom girls. That would be very fun, especially now that we have tag titles.
Oh my god, yeah.
We could definitely bring in some of those Stardom tag teams and some of those Stardom women to face. And certainly, there's probably a Stardom championship in there for fucking Mercedes somewhere. I'm sure they've been waiting for that call. You know what I mean? Like, so, honestly, I'm kind of surprised she hasn't gone to Stardom and won something yet, to be honest with you. Has she? I don't think she has. I mean, since she's won all these ones that she currently has, I think.
Yeah, not sure.
So, I think that kind of, I mean, and, you know, Tony Khan loves to do this thing where he'll do one thing like that this past year with CMLL. It may have been that he put in the call to Stardom then to set something up. You know, be like, hey, look at what we're doing right now. We could do this with you guys. And all you'd have to do is send us a few people that you're not even really going to be using right now that are good. And for Stardom, that's got to be fucking easy. I mean, similarly like to like DDT and fucking Noah, where they could just send a couple of guys that are really fucking talented, but they just don't have a spot for them right now. It's so easy to do that. I mean, that's why we have Ishii basically as a regular weekly wrestler on AEW, more or less, because he's very popular over there, but he's not always being used on every week. So they can have him come over to the US and represent them. So I would love to see Stardom do something like that. I don't think it's in the cards yet, but Tony Khan, if you somehow hear this, fucking lock it in, man. That should be cool.
So, Rush and Jalisco are both injured. And it sounds like they're both likely going to need surgery for their injuries. So Rush already did stuff with his ROH title, the tag title. And yeah, so.
Yeah, like, so say that title, Sammy originally won it by switching partners. So what, is he just going to switch partners again? Yeah,
right. Maybe he'll switch to the Beast Mortos if he didn't already.
Fucking round robin. It's Ring of Honor. Let's just let him fucking, not round robin. What the fuck is it called? Fucking Freebird it in Ring of Honor. Fuck it, we ball, you know?
Fuck it. So. Yeah, a little update on that. So I wanted to give a mention of that. And yeah, it does look like he's teaming with the Beast Mortos for the vacant ROH World Tag Team title against.
Okay, so they're not doing it. Essentially, it is that. And they won't necessarily win. But if they were to win, that's essentially what they'd be doing.
Yeah. And they are facing Tommy Billington and Adam Priest. So
honestly, throw it on Billington and Priest. That seems like the right move, you know? Yep. I mean, we've already failed this title reign twice for Sammy Guevara. That's not his fault. It just, it happened, you know, like he didn't work with fucking Dustin and it didn't work with fucking, you know, well, it worked with Rush. It just didn't get to go anywhere because of injuries. So, you know,
we had this week on BTE, we had backstage at AEW Full Gear. Some of the best BTE episodes, 22 minute episode.
This was, when I saw the length of this, I was like, fuck yeah, let's go.
Fuck yeah. Shows the guys traveling, doing the luggage, working out, attending some, you know, some wrestling crap.
I knew we were
and
back in.
And then it starts showing some backstage
shoe shopping,
stuff.
Bro. We were back in at that moment. I was like, oh yeah. Shit, we are so back.
So a lot of the traditional stuff, the part that I know you and I really loved was them opening up some AEW trading cards. That was cool.
Yeah, that was lit. Dude, the editing in this episode, too, was really good. Shout out, Brandon.
It was. And then, you know, they show stuff from the match, and then it ultimately ends up being them kind of wanting to see if Kenny wants to hang. turns him away. He's just not ready. And then he starts giggling and he's back in. He brings him in. So really good BTE. Yeah, this
he literally hit the fucking, was it fucking Truth or Turbo that hits the, you son of a bitch. He hit them with that, bro.
Yo, Young Bucks, you trying to sell that Shibata auto we got?
Yeah, I'm down. I might buy it.
Give you a hot dog and a hand. Wait. No. So we had a little bit of a mailbag pop in this week. And from a new listener of the show, Tyler from Kentucky wrote to us. He said, love the pod. Thank you, Tyler. New-ish to AEW. Watched my first show last December. Haven't missed an AEW or ROH pay-per-view since. Hell yeah, dude. I was wondering for newer wrestling fans like myself, if you could do some history segments about AEW or possibly some segments here and there explaining about other promotions and how they shape the AEW landscape. I'd really love to do that. You guys rock. Thanks. Well, thank you, Tyler, for hitting us with a message, popping in on Spotify. We greatly appreciate that. And absolutely, I think that's something we kind of casually do in the background, but sometimes don't really go in depth with what we're talking about. So
I'm pretty infamous for being like, oh, remember this thing that happened 2 years ago as like a reference point for what I'm talking about now, which I realize now after reading this comment, like it's probably, I'm probably leaving some of you out in the cold, and I honestly apologize for that. I didn't know that. Like I thought, my thought was, and by the way, I want to be clear that I'm not saying anything about anybody else that will be listening to the show. I assumed if you found our show, you were just like a freak, you know, like,
you're in the weeds, brother.
But, you know, I want to give you guys credit. You're just some regular wrestling fans out there looking for something. Not that it needs crediting. I didn't know that was the kind of people that found our show. So that makes me feel a little more confident that we have a good beat for what's going on in wrestling, you know? So.
And Tyler, I'm glad you found our show. And 100%. Yeah, dude, you picked a good month, December last year. And I think 2025 has been a really strong year for AEW. Even with that weaker world title reign, arguably 2 week world. You know, I think the Moxley.
We've said this for a while. The title reigns at the top really haven't been affecting the quality of the shows. You know, like
yeah, it's, no, it's it hasn't because wild, the other stuff's been so great.
WWE had times like that where the world champion wasn't spectacular, but it was fine, and like everything else was just so good, it didn't really matter. You know, like.
So what I want to do is next week is the when we do our podcast, it'll be the day before Winter is Coming. So. We'll do a little history kind of Winter is Coming. And I think that'd be a good place to set the tone of why Winter is Coming so important, what happened there. And I like the idea of kind of including this. So thanks again for writing into us. Greatly appreciated. And that being said, Duke, I guess let's jump into the main course of our shows, if you will.
Yeah, 100%.
Take it away from Dynamite. We've already covered two of the matches.
Yep, the Dynamite Thanksgiving Eve featuring C2 debut. All right, welcome to the Continental Classic. Anyway, so we got our leagues announced here. I'll still say we should have announced we should have had a fucking video like we did last year, man. I mean, it's cool that we got them, but I was a little annoyed that we didn't get these until the day of or the days before. I wanted it then, but it's all right. It's fine. It's a fucking banger tournament anyway. It doesn't matter. We recapped the Don Callis family's night at the pay-per-view. Some interesting stuff mentioned there. Kind of like some seeds being planted, showing how we got to the point where we got Takeshita and all that shit. And Kyle and C2 and everyone pissed at each other and wants to compete. Talked about the Kyle Fletcher versus Okada match. We had more recap from Full Gear of the what I referred to as the Buck-Kenny reunion. The Bucks and Kenny returning to being fans. And we go backstage to Kenny Omega. I want to say this was Lexi Nair that was doing this interview, potentially. It might have been Renee.
Yes, Lexi.
Okay, was Lexi? I should make sure. I usually could picture these segments in my mind, but I, for some reason, couldn't imagine Lexi for some reason. But yeah. Anyway, so it was Lexi. And I asked him, hey, are you and the Bucks friends again? What's the deal? You know? And he's like, well, you know, basically, I don't know about all that just yet, but everybody deserves a second chance, basically. You know, I think they do as well. And then, right at the end of this, as, Kenny goes back in, Bucks walk out. So, you know, obviously, they're getting along better than he was suggesting. He just doesn't want to commit too much yet, obviously, which makes a lot of sense, given where his character's coming from. Do you have any thoughts on that, Charlie? I mean, it was just a nice little, maybe, you know? But also, I think it's pretty confirmed.
Yeah, no, especially after BTE, it's pretty confirmed. I like this cute little segment. I just realized I have my mic kind of way over to the left of me. Hopefully it doesn't matter considering, you know, our software, we use the compression stuff anyway, so it shouldn't matter. But if I did sound a little far away, apologies. But I liked this. I just feel so good to have him back on screen together and not beat him to a bloody pulp. That was fun while it happened. It's been time. Let's do this thing in 2026. Let's have our guys really be fully back.
Back in 2017, it was fun to beat up John Cena in WWE when AJ Styles and the machine gun Carl Anderson and big what is the fucking Luke Gallows? I don't know, gigantic man Luke Gallows, also known as Jesus, what the fuck? The Good Brothers, who are a tag team that was very popular in New Japan back in the 2015, 2016 era. So there's a little history for you. You know, that's a little.
Yeah, they also briefly showed up in AEW when there was the AEW
TNA
partnership.
World Tag Team Champions, along with Kenny being the TNA World Champion, and they were showing up on TNA more than they were on fucking AEW sometimes.
Pretty fucking crazy.
And
that was a different time.
That's a different time. I'm glad that we now know that we should delve into that a little bit more, because I don't mind derailing for a little bit to just talk about that history, because this is stuff that it kind of makes me think of and reminds me of, you know. So. But yeah, good stuff there. So Bucks and Kenny back together. Sisters of Sin took on the Babes of Wrath. I mean, look, it was fine. But man, did this not illustrate what I was talking about earlier with this tournament, right? It has just lost so much steam, Charlie. It's tough. Because we should be getting more excited as this goes on.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'll just ask you this. I mean, who the fuck is winning these championships, bro?
I don't know, but this match, this was rough. This was a rough match. I don't know what happened here, but for some reason, and I don't want to be too harsh when I say this, Willow's the only one that looked like she belonged, and I don't know what the fuck happened. And I mean that in the most respectful way. I just talked at length about how good I thought Sky Blue was. In the Blood and Guts match, for example, I've talked for almost 2 years now about how great Harley Cameron is. I don't know what happened in this match. It felt so out of sorts. And you know, I see some people on Blue Sky, YouTube, and all the rest getting a little upset that how come the Sisters of Sin, our real tag team, isn't getting to the end. I don't mind that as much as other people. It is what it is.
I think the part that bothers them is that this is a tag team that was established well.
Oh, correct.
Well, before the fucking tournament kicked off. So
I have no problem.
If we're just saying it's tag team wrestling and it's different than regular wrestling, they should have more chemistry than every other team.
Yeah, and both tag teams that were established before lost. It's one of those things. I can see where they're coming from. It doesn't matter to me that much. I kind of always thought our first... I mean, I still think it's going to be Tony and Mina. I'd love to be proven wrong, but maybe... The fact that we're not getting Tony and Mina versus Mercedes and Athena, I think already is a great step forward. I don't know what happened here, Duke. I watched this match in a vacuum. I didn't watch it between everything. I watched it on its own. And I was very, very disappointed in this match. So,
yeah, I don't think I was as disappointed as you. I will say my biggest takeaway from this, I mean, having Willow and Harley in the finals of this is going to add a lot of energy no matter who they're facing. So, because there'll be people behind them. So,
are we going to do babyface versus babyface? Which we might not. So, it might be Willow and Harley versus the mega problems.
Yeah, and if that might be your biggest match that you could have that's left. So, it might be the angle. And
that was my pick to win the whole thing was Penelope and Megan. So, I don't know. Maybe they're just sticking
and
with their
gut
and saying,
no offense to Penelope, but Penelope, I mean, with the momentum that Marina has and hasn't really done anything as the female member of the Death Riders, you know, kind of think they're maybe even more favorites now, right? But then that's why maybe pick Babes of Wrath, because they're going to be the one team that maybe you'd want to maybe potentially beat them. I actually wonder if it'll be Babes of Wrath now because of that. I don't know. We'll have to see.
I do think, though, the fact that this is the only disappointment I've had in this tournament, that's fine. So, but, you know, we got to these semifinal matches, was just expecting a little more, especially with the quality we've had lately, especially in the tournament itself. And for some reason, this match just didn't get there, and that's okay. But
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Yeah. The Ops and Samoa Joe were called out to the ring to explain their actions at the pay-per-view. Swerve arrived at the same time, and so they sent Shibata to intercept. Samoa Joe then showed a video explaining why he did what he did, and it was fine. And then Swerve comes out, and as does Hangman Adam Page. So I guess they're a fucking tag team now. You know, like...
This new Swerve theme is so good.
Good, great Swerve theme, I gotta say.
My
lit-ass theme. He's gonna... When it comes out to that, especially as a heel dude, oh my god.
If you're gonna replace that iconic theme, it better be good. And man, this feels like final fucking boss type vibe here. Like, this is good shit.
You feel like you just coming out to that with the world title.
You literally feel like you just met the final boss of a video game when that music starts playing. Like, it is that good. And it's that ominous too, right? Music is such a great way of telling a story. Just in its own. Theme songs matter, goddammit.
I think they do. I think there are a lot of wrestlers out there for a while there at WWE that just had like generic ass like rock riffs or whatever, or even less than that. Like, sometimes it was just like some random ass electronic beats, basically, you know, like, and didn't really have a lot of meaning to their character. And I feel like that's a really, really key part. I mean, you can, I think, and I know some people will disagree with me, and they're gonna think I'm crazy because I'm an AEW fan and a lot of AEW is in ring, but I don't care how good your match is in there in ring. You can have a fucking phenomenal match, but if that entrance doesn't buy people in, they're not gonna get to that point with your match. They might say, oh my god, what an athletically insane match, but if you don't tell them a story, it's not gonna really, like, long term, it's gonna have diminishing returns. So, like, I think they should focus on entrances, on promo segments, on stuff like that more. Not that I don't think they do, but I think that's what a lot of wrestling, I think a lot of that, why some things don't work, gets lost in a lot of that stuff. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the good thing is, I think there's only one shitty theme in AEW.
Sure. I mean, I was just saying in general, I think that that's like a big misconception that a lot of wrestling fans have, that like, that it's either
that entrance
or
presentation is the showmanship. I mean, that is the true showmanship of wrestling.
I feel like, and I'm saying, I think you can lose the crowd during your entrance if it fucking sucks.
Yes.
I think it can happen.
Bro, Hook's music loses the fucking crowd.
Yeah.
It's so bad.
Yeah. They hung the bouncers, so shout out, you know, I guess, lynching in 2026.
They can't tag team.
They're going to. All right.
They can't.
They're going to.
They fucking
can't. You say they can't. They did a thing in tandem.
That's fine. You can do that all you want. If they fucking...
Charlie, when they're in tandem, there's no fight they cannot win.
When we get that match graphic for Hangman Adam Page and Swerve Strickland versus Powerhouse Hobbs and Shibata at Winter is Coming, I'm going to be pissed. I'm just letting you know. This is the only
Aren't
thing that
Are you
going to
be more pissed
actually...
when they lose, too?
That's fine. I'm just saying... I'm very protective of this, and I don't want them tagging, because I think this is the best rivalry that they have ever had and could possibly ever have. And so let's keep it going while we still can.
I do think there's always the possibility that we're being faked out here and that they're not actually going to be a real team, but then like they're going to fight each other again. So
can
that's...
they coexist? Tune in this Friday night on SmackDown.
Just saying, it could be a fake out. So, this match wasn't a fake out though. Mascara Dorada took on John Moxley.
Woohoo!
All right, this was a fun one. A lot of banger action in both leagues on Dynamite this week. But yeah,
I wrote down the styles have clashed.
They have indeed.
Call up AJ.
Call AJ. Bring him in. He needs gimmick infringement. Yeah, I was wondering which Moxley we were going to get. Obviously, we did get that sort of Death Rider-y Mox, but I think in this tournament, and I think this was kind of the case last year, because it's so unique to a lot of what everybody else is doing, it kind of works for C2. You know, it doesn't necessarily... We can have, as long as all the Death Riders aren't doing it, looking at you, Pac, you know, but as long as they're not all doing it, you know, we'll be fine, you know, because they have their own unique styles that they can do, right? So, but yeah, so I think he was fine anyway. He still delivered, you know. It's fucking John Moxley. He's the goddamn ace for a reason, you know? And I think Dorada continued to show here why he's considered like the future of CMLL.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's really athletic as fuck. He's pretty good at selling. He's like genuinely one of the best young luchadors on the planet.
You want to know how we know Moxley loves this shit? When he hit that fucking dive, who the fuck did he think he was? He's like, I am wrestling. A fucking young superstar lucha libre wrestler. Let me
something.
Let me fucking hit the ropes as fast as I can and hit a dive, smash my head into the fucking barricade.
Well, you know what's so funny about that, too? He used to hit that dive every fucking week on WWE. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's just, this is, you know.
It's been so long since we saw him do it, though. It was so fucking funny.
Wrestling
like,
Mascara Dorada brought him back 15 years. Bro thought did, he was bro. Still invincible.
Bro said, John, bro, I don't came, think you're fucking. Came Dean for a second, bro.
Yeah, I don't think you're, you're not back in CZW.
I was expecting him to hit that like fucking little like lariat thing where he fucking bounces off the ropes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And instead he goes full blown fucking head smashes the barricade. So I was like, yo,
it's fucking
he's
guy.
Really here in the C2.
Yeah,
holy shit.
That's the version of John we're getting. He's fucking going balls to the wall. I love it.
That
but he still did his thing, and I like that. He's not just saying, yeah. Oh, I'm going to be fucking Dean Ambrose or fucking John Moxley from like 3 years ago that was doing all this crazy shit. Like, no, I'm going to be me, but I'm also going to fucking try and win these matches.
If I'm wrestling Mascara Dorada.
We get to the Super Juniors aspect of it, Charlie, because sometimes that's what happens. Sometimes you have to wrestle a slightly different style. Shit, we saw fucking...
The Funky Weapon started taking it real.
That was fucking one of the best tournaments we've watched. And then there was last year that match with fucking Kushida and fucking... Oh my God, I talked about him earlier. Jesus, fucking Kosei Fujita, where they fucking took their fucking shoes off and had a fucking grapple match, dude. Like,
yeah.
Ugh. Anyway,
love that shit.
We could have that shit in AEW. So, anyway.
That genuinely put a smile on my face when Moxley hit that. Not gonna lie.
It's good shit. It's good shit. He's fucking, he knows. He knows. But yeah, he's, you know, Mox is still wrestling like the ace, showing off veteran savvy, showing off his technique, hard hitting, nasty offense, and he picks up the win with a Darce choke. I didn't expect Dorada to win here because Mox, you know, he's the ace, but if he had won, it would have been really cool. But I mean, I think Dorada's going to end up picking some other big wins up in this tournament. But I thought he looked really good here. And I thought Mox looked really good here. I mean, we've kind of been talking about it. Was there anything else that you wanted to add about this, Charlie? I mean,
we know his next match is Claudio. I like that they're both one.
Cool. That should be good. Yeah, we'll see what happens there. Imagine Claudio beats him. Pretty cool.
You know, that was our last women's tag of the week. Do you think the finale maybe is that Winter is Coming?
It could be. We haven't got that announcement yet, but we could get that announcement this week maybe. Yeah.
I could be okay with that.
Yeah.
Let him main event the Collision version.
Oh, well, you know what? I think this week. Wait, so when's the Hardcore Holiday Death Match?
That's this week.
Okay, if that's this week, then they would have enough time
to set that up.
That's
December 3rd, so.
So, yeah, they'd have enough time.
December
10th
and December 13th is Winter is Coming, and Winter is Coming
Speaking
from the
of
13th.
That was the next segment, was Marina backstage. Carter. Tony Storm's like, we've got to learn what the week's we got the match bet. And we're going to do Holiday Death Match. I was like, all right, shit. All right, you know. So there's that.
People have been picking stakes and losing lately, so.
That is true. What is that about?
Worth
noting.
It would
be better. They're calling their shots, you know. Chris Statlander was backstage telling us what's next for her with the championship. And she just wants to be the fucking best, man. I love that for her. You know what I mean? I love that for Chris Statlander. Fucking go get it, dude. Did we get our next challenger in this? I don't think so, right?
I didn't write it down if we did.
If
so
we
I don't
did,
think so.
I apologize. But if we did, we'll talk about it next week.
Okay,
who would you want to be? Who would you want it to be? Yeah. Let's see. Who's out there right now? We got Tekla would be a good one. If she's not busy with somebody else right now, which she might be. You never know. Post-tournament, Julia's maybe going to need something to do. You know, Sky Blue is always a good option. Willow for the history. If Willow doesn't win the tag titles, that might be the one.
Yeah.
Could Harley Cameron squeeze in for the world title? Maybe.
Maybe.
Mercedes again. I know that's annoying, but I mean, we could do it, you know? Yeah, there's a lot of options. Oh, I know who I was thinking last night when I was watching Collision. Jamie Hayter.
That'd be good. And
so
I would like it to be Deonna Purrazzo. And I know she hasn't been on TV.
Yeah, she deserves it for fucking sure. And she hasn't
but
been
she,
used. I'm with you.
They got scumbags for not being in this tournament. And I would like a genuine...
Another previously established tag team from a different place that existed before us. You know what I mean? Like, that...
A genuine... They've had vignettes together on AEW television as the fucking Vendetta.
I'm pretty sure they tagged previously, though.
I would like them to
be
like, we're sorry... We still want you to like be a part of this company. We're giving you a legit title feud. Let's do this damn thing. So
Lock in. Ty Valkyrie would be a bad shout, dude. I mean, I know she's a joke tag team member right now, but they could
Ty has just been losing a little bit too much lately.
Wait, no, that's how you do it. You have Stat be the one to come out for that challenge. There you go. Lock it in.
I mean, it's just one of those things, you know. I think this next challenger could be a fun opportunity for someone like a Deonna Purrazzo, maybe Serena Deeb, just someone that really could use that legit shot. But if not, I like Tekla being the best here, because Tekla, of course, got a singles win too on Collision. So I think Tekla would make a lot of sense.
We had Shibata call out. No, sorry. We had the Darby versus Kevin Knight match. Then we had Shibata called out by Eddie Kingston. Fine. I mean, I guess they're just going to fight. Sure. Match ended up being fine. So yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
And then that takes us to our main event, Orange Cassidy versus Claudio Castagnoli. I thought this was a pretty great little sprint match here, you know? I can't believe a main event fucking C2 match didn't really get time, but I mean, I guess it was going to happen eventually, I guess, but damn, you know?
Hey, got the right winner, though.
Correct. And yeah, so Claudio ends up picking up the win here, and they tried to interview him in the, you know, like, they tried to hit like a post-match interview, Death Riders attack, and, you know, ends with like a, you know, a fight. A fight! They brawled it out.
Yep.
You know?
So, there's probably someone wondering why we haven't brought this up yet. And I think now's a good time, too. So, when we did our Continental Classic prediction show, Tony Schiavone mentioned along the lines of Okada's title. They never clarified. When we did our predictions, we ran with Unified, because surely, Duke, they wouldn't break them up. Well,
they actually did the worst version you could do of it.
We are entirely wrong, because the Continental Classic is for the Continental Championship only. So yes, if you were wondering why were they going off so much about there being 5 singles titles, what are they talking about? Guys, there is. The Continental title, the International, the TNT, and the National are all the championships. So,
yeah, so the way this is essentially going to work is AW now has a triple crown, essentially. If you win both the International and the Continental in a single year, you're going to get the Unified Championship. If you don't, meaning if Okada loses this tournament, Unified Championship goes in the back. That's what it should mean. If it doesn't mean this, if he still has a Unified Championship after losing the Continental.
Well, yeah, no, he can't.
Seriously, like that's how this needs to work.
What I want to wonder is, does a unified title get brought out if someone else does it with 2 other titles? If Ricochet wins the national championship and then wins the international championship.
Shit, you shouldn't have used Continental, because then he could combine national and international to be Continental. Fuck.
Is he the unified champion? Could we see this bounce around? I don't know. Duke, that title's on the line for its own.
I really hope not, because then that would mean you get a bullshit title reign for not actually winning another title. I mean, you win a second title, but then you win a third title just for winning a second title, because it goes in the books as unified champion. So, like...
Yep. Okada has held, technically, in the record books, 3 titles. So, yeah, I don't know. I honestly, I'm at the point, I don't even think I care.
Yeah, it's like, who cares?
It is what it is.
We could have 15 singles championships, and it doesn't matter, you know, like...
It is what it is. I think, if anything, now it actually makes it a little easier to maybe not book Okada to win the fucking thing. So, I'll take that. But we just need to really take a step back in 2026, and let's figure out what we're doing here, because I don't think we need, counting the world title, 5 fucking champions running around. Counting Ring of Honor, 6. Counting Ring of Honor Television, 7. We don't need that. Let's take a step back, really back, and just lock it in a little bit. So, again, I have no problem with this many titles if we have 6 hours of television. I'll just be straight up and say that. The only problem I get is 4 hours. You're guaranteed to have some of them go weeks without actually doing anything. That's just the way wrestling works. You could be like, well, if you did it here, took a week off, did it here. That's not how wrestling works. We know how this goes. Someone gets put on the back burner. It's just the way it is. So, and yeah, like you said, we're going to have our 3rd set of tag titles. That's 2, and then 2 more with the women with their, they got it made. Just 1 world title, 1 TBS title. They're both, they mean so much. They're so hard to win.
I don't mean to be an asshole, by the way. The worst case scenario now, unfortunately, I think, is Okada winning this tournament because of this rule. Because if that happens, then why the fuck are we even talking about it?
Yeah, maybe.
I'm not saying,
right?
You don't plant the seed, but like, why are we even inventing a scenario where he could be still international champion, lose the unified championship, and then we just have the continental championship be separate? Like, it feels like this is a scenario we should have not put ourselves in when we made him the double champion.
It feels like they should have just made it a fucking trophy.
Yeah, maybe.
To this day, biggest fucking what the fuck are we doing was not making this a trophy. Just like the Owen Hart thing, right? If you want to parade it as a title, you can. But that's a trophy, just in the form of a title. So I wanted to mention that. I didn't want to forget that this week because I'm sure there were some people wondering, you know, what did we think of that? So I guess let's get into Collision, huh?
You can do whatever the fuck you want. You're never going to ruin the C2 unless you just put on bad matches. So
Exactly. They'll never. What it's for is what it's for. Like that, I don't really. It is what it is, right? What matters is we keep the history books of Eddie Kingston and Kazuchika Okada have won the Continental Classic. That's what matters. The tournament is what matters. What they're fighting for, they could be fighting for that fucking ring, which we'll talk about that again next week when we're doing a little Winners Coming preview. That used to be a big deal. So, yeah. Leave that little nugget for you. All right, let's jump to Collision. Thanksgiving edition. I'm with you. I didn't watch it Thanksgiving, but, you know. Watched it on the following week, and it was a fun little show.
Like, there was like three football games that day. There was like fucking other shit going on.
So much going on. So versus Mike Bailey in the C2 Gold League match, we open it up. Chops are afoot. Pac dragged him outside, walking the dog, as I like to say. And Pac really just dominated this motherfucker, dude. He kicked his ass almost to an embarrassing degree.
Yeah, this is a little disappointing considering what these two could do in like another place and another time. Like,
in that aspect, sure. But for what this tournament is,
I think
Mike Bailey's our underdog now. I think 100% he takes the role as underdog in gold. So Pac kicked his fucking ass, dude. Pac's got to be the favorite now if you're kayfabing it up, right? He kicked his ass. This was, look, it wasn't like 90-10. It was like 72 to fucking 38, 28, whatever math. But this is almost as one-sided as these matches get, bro. So take that for what you will. I don't know. Pac looked really good here, though. That dodging the ultimate weapon was great. Pac just beat the crap out of him, dude. What'd you think of this? I mean, the ref had to stop the match.
Yeah. Made Pac look super badass.
Yeah, it did.
But I mean, yeah, tough first match for Bailey. Maybe he does a impression of his tag partner from the Super Juniors this year where he's going to lose the first couple and then he wins out.
Maybe he takes the Danny role from 23.
Yeah, that's right. That's what Danny did.
He lost his
first couple.
Yeah, 23 he was.
I think he lost two or three, and then he won his last three and ended up not making the finals, but he ended up spoiling someone out of the finals, I want to say, you know, so.
Yep, Brody King.
Yep, there you go. So, and it was a huge win in his career at the time. So we could do something similar like that with Mike Bailey. I'm not sure who the other person he would be to bop out, but maybe that's how Okada doesn't make the final. Maybe that's what happens. Ooh, that would be cool because they have history too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I needed to get cold outside. That's what I need right now because the C2 is not hitting the same in terms of weather. I'm sitting here in a hot fucking.
I'm fine with it because right now it's like, if it's cold for you right now, it's going to be like 15 degrees here. So if you can fuck off. Like,
I was sitting here today doing lawn work and it's fucking 80. And I'm like, what is going on, man? This is bullshit.
That fucking equator will do it to you, bro.
Fuck. Danny was back chirping with Mox. He's going to put an end to Matt Menard tonight. Brodito, that was where they talked about their thing that, you know, he felt bad about losing the titles. And Brody King said he had nothing to be ashamed of. Brodito was not done yet. They would challenge for the titles again. But you have to go on and defend your title at ROH Final Battle. We know who he's facing.
Yes, and I just fucking...
I'm pulling it up. That's right. I don't know if we talked about this on the show or we talked about it off. Survival of the Fittest match.
Yes, it's, you know...
Bandito, Blake Christian, Beast Mortos, Guevara, Commander, Hechicero. Good match.
Yeah, that should be a banger. He might not win that match, honestly, with that many people.
Oh, shit. Final Battle's this weekend.
Yeah, we might want to check. You know, we haven't watched any Ring of Honor pay-per-views really this year. You down to, like, tune in for that one?
I think we'll probably tune in.
See what Bandido does. I mean, because here's the thing. We
December
watched that.
5th. Is that Friday, hopefully?
Ooh.
It is. Ooh, nice. Okay.
I'm just going to tell everybody now, we might have to wait till Sunday to watch that because I'll be busy this weekend, but...
Yeah. But, you know, we'll keep an eye on it. We'll definitely...
It could be a Saturday night thing, if it depends on...
Here's the thing.
But
the goal is to talk about it. We'll be able to talk about it next week in our news.
At the very minimum, if we don't get a pay-per-view review out, we will talk about it on this show for sure, yeah.
So, that'll be nice. And then they informed us of the ROH Final Battle. Oh, and that's where they went over the match. Matt Menard versus Daniel Garcia. Menard was chirping him up, tried to get him into a fight. Moxley was great on commentary, as you'd expect. And he talked about, you know, Menard's not about living the life of a pro wrestler. And no one trains harder than Death Riders. And Menard was the past, while Garcia is the future. Dude, Garcia's headbutting him. He's busting him open. He's beating his ass.
There was actually a good story told here, I thought, about what Danny's willing to do to become the best wrestler in the world. And if you track his story over the last couple of years, I feel like we thought, as Danny just kind of been spinning his wheels, right, buddy, we've been wrong. Go back to the JAS.
There was a period of time that he did, but
what?
He locked
it back.
Tie
it all together across the whole time.
Sure.
He was always trying to find what it was that he needed to do to be the best wrestler in the world. At first, when he got there, it was teaming with 2.0. Then it was joining the JAS. Then it was associating with Brian Danielson and the Death Riders, or the Death Riders, the Blackpool Combat Club, which then ended up falling apart. Now it's joining the most evil faction besides the Don Callis family in the Death Riders that betrayed his hero or whatever, and becoming the evil version of himself to, again, like he did in the JAS, to try and reach that next level. I think that was kind of the story you're
do
being
what
told
he has
here.
To do to win.
Yes. And I think that's kind of like you see that here, because I think, you know, in Matt Menard's mind, if he just punches him in the head enough times and says the right words, he'll come back, right? But he's so far gone. It's like some of the characters we've read in some of our fiction books, right? They get so caught up in their own fucking majesty that they forget that they, you know, have people that help them to get there, and they start like doing things they would have never done before, you know, and so on, right? So, yeah, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting turn of his character. And I will say, I'm sure we were both worried when this, you know, when he got thrown to the Death Riders, are they actually going to do anything with him? They are. This is actually really good character development.
It was definitely that preamble before when they finally started to tease it. It's like, all right, thank you. Let's get this going for him. Because there was probably like a 3-month stretch post TNT title. He was lost. I mean, he wasn't even on TV anymore for fucking almost like 2-3 weeks on end. And it's just like, let's get this back. And he's wrestling in CMLL right now. There was a story over the weekend where he skipped out on Thanksgiving with his family to go wrestling in Mexico. So, again, he wants this. In wrestling, this is a business. How bad do you want it? And Danny wants it. So, yeah.
How many wrestlers you could probably name the amount of wrestlers on one hand right now with that kind of mentality in the business right now, you know? Yeah.
Some guys really want it. So, yeah. So Moxley just really, really good on commentary here, teeing stuff up. Briscoe comes out, says he's thankful to today being the TBS champion, and he wants to fight Danny for the title. Yeah. Ricochet backstage talking about how the demand is done.
I don't want to be a dick to Mark Briscoe. Is there like a non-zero chance that Danny just yoinks it right off of him? Like,
no, that's not happening. Not to Mark Briscoe. He had a pretty good promo on Dynamite. The little backstage thing, that was fine. That was good. This one was okay, too. Ricochet more just gloating here. He's going around the world defending the title. We'll see. I hope so. Soakley FTR come out. Hathaway says the best day of his life. They've been fighting since they were 16. Dak starts talking. Lights go out. Gun Club comes out. And they pretty much are talking about how they beat FTR 2 weeks ago. And they're the last team to beat them. They won 200K last week. And they won a legit match with them. So, yeah.
It's super down.
Short promo, but everyone made sense. Great motivations.
This is like your classic wrestling, man. This is a team that's had their number in the past. They've been the Collision Cowboys along with them, you know what I mean? And, yeah, checks out. This is who I put as my first, you know, challengers.
Yeah, MXM. Yeah. It's good. It makes sense. Winner is coming or pay-per-view?
Dude, we could do both with the history with these teams.
Let's run this one in Wales at Cardiff for winter is coming. Let's go.
Super down.
Give it that collision spot. Yeah, buddy. MXMTV came out as characters of the Wizard of Oz. Outrunners and
Dalton. That didn't pop me. I'll give it to you.
That was good. That was good. They answer the call. Outrunners and Dalton.
It didn't hit me at first. I was like, oh, Johnny's wearing green tights.
Dalton and Outrunners win a quick match. As they're celebrating, Ricochet comes out, starts fighting with some fucking country music star in the crowd.
Whatever. Yeah, that was a little bit.
Whatever. Don Callis family backstage. He's thankful. And again, just more layers here of the incoming Civil War.
When that angle pops off, it's going to be insane, isn't it?
It's going to be great. Shibata versus Eddie Kingston.
This was fun. I liked this.
Yep. Eddie's really starting to get his groove back. I think this was his best match yet since he's been back. A really quick finish here with the DDT for the win, but, you know, makes sense to do that on Shibata. So, quick victory there.
A lot of different styles of Japanese influence in this match, I feel like, you know?
Absolutely. And then he grabs the mic.
What was this? No offense to Eddie, but what the hell?
Like... So, Eddie Kingston is, as with MJF, usually the very reliable hand when you grab him the mic, right? He's 9.99 out of 10 gonna fucking go out there and put on some great shit.
Yeah.
What the hell was this? This is all over the place.
I think it's the same spot we're at, which is that they told him, you're getting the shot, go make it work for the crowd. We don't know how to fucking make it work, go figure it out.
So he pretty much says he doesn't blame Hook. Okay.
Why?
Yeah. New York.
Or why, Eddie?
New
why
York.
Don't you blame
That's
Hook?
What I point to.
Yeah, sure.
He believed he does not deserve love. He's talking about how the fans love him. He said Samoa Joe has tried to corrupt Hook, but before he can corrupt him more, he's going to take him and fight him directly and challenge him to a world title match at Winter is Coming. Fans were going pretty good for him. He's a good babyface. He started to really get his motion back at the end. But I just think it was all over the place at the beginning.
It meandered. It's fine.
Yeah,
it
got there at the end. And by the end, it was a full-blown great babyface promo.
Yeah, I don't think Eddie ever goes out there with like a plan on what to say anyway either. I think this was just one where I don't know if he could figure out a way to like convincingly convince everybody that he was going to get this world title shot at Winter is Coming, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, Eddie, don't worry about that shit, man. You're not the one booking the matches. Just go out and tell us. If you can't find a way to make it work, then maybe just campaign for it to not be an in-ring promo, be like one of your like 30-second backstage things that are really effective. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't need 10 minutes backstage or 5 minutes backstage to be effective. We don't need him to go out. I don't know how long the segment was, like 5-6 minutes, whatever it was, like probably longer. Like, it didn't need to be this. I just felt like he was uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah. Red Velvet backstage.
And not like, oh my God, he couldn't be in front of a camera. No, like, he's a fucking professional wrestler. He's fucking way tougher than me. No, I think it's when you get put in an awkward spot like that sometimes, it can be difficult to deliver that convincingly, you know, like.
Yeah. Red Velvet challenge Mercedes at Ring of Honor Final Battle. Tekla versus Ty Mello. No Anna Jay here, worth mentioning. But, yeah.
Isn't Anna hurt right now, technically?
I don't know. But her contract's up soon, so. Keep an eye on that. A Mello for the Ty KO. Tekla stomped on her feet, ducked a clothesline, hit the spider walk, spear, curb stomp, dub. Triangle of Madness came down, Jamie Hayter and Chris Statlander made the save. So, yeah. Not too much here, but worth noting. And then we had our main event match of Konosuke Takeshita versus Roderick Strong. And the match starts out fucking beating the crap out of each other with those strikes, exactly what you'd expect. And then they just kind of meanders a little, if you will. Once we get out of that opening sequence, they kind of take a back clip a little bit. The thing that almost made me quit watching wrestling forever was Takeshita pulling out the money clip. I hurt on the inside after that a little bit. I was in pain. Every time I see the money clip, I get flashbacks to the fucking Wrestle Kingdom match where Okada put on the wrestling clip for at least 20 minutes. So the money clip. So, yeah.
I mean,
that was interesting. But, you know, They brought the strong hits. Roddy ended up really being able to counter a lot of Takeshita's go-to moves, which you'd expect, but they were really just like focused on out wrestling each other. And I think that worked for what they were going for. But I think we were really teased off at the beginning of that this was going to be a hard hitting match. And I don't think it really turned into that. It just kind of got shortened out. And, you know, I think the beginning promise of the match just ended up being, you know, trying to out wrestle each other. And I think that worked for what they were trying to go for. I just don't think it hit the level that it could have if they really kept up with that pace from the beginning. But Takeshita won with the Raging Fire. So I was fully expecting this match to be my favorite this week, but I just don't think it got there. So I think it was one of the weaker matches this week in the E2. So, but Takeshita kicks it off, 3 points. What'd you think of the match?
I thought the match was good. Yeah, I didn't feel quite the same way as you. I didn't think it was like the best match of the week or anything, you know, but like, thought it was fine. And I could see where you're coming from for sure. It's just I just didn't see it that way. But I think Takeshita, he's the one that I'm like the most locked in on in this tournament. That I
don't want to see him use the money clip every match. The money clip, I mean, sucks.
That is silly. Like,
it's a bad submission. It doesn't even look good. I don't get that. I don't get the money clip thing.
Yeah.
Is it a pissing contest with Okada? Is that just
even in different brackets? The guy's moving to get under his skin. Yeah. 100%.
I mean, for sure. But like, let's hopefully it's not every night. Because I don't know. I don't need to see him holding the fucking money clip for 2 minutes every night in a 13 minute match. So, but yeah, I think Roddy did show some good fire here. So I still expect Roddy to have one of those matches this tournament that fucking breaks the foundation of the goddamn company. So
100%.
What do we have next week? Well, we know we have Moxley and Claudio. We have Okada versus Pac, and then I believe it's Kyle Fletcher versus Kevin Knight on Dynamite as well. And then Timeless Love Bombs versus the Mega Problems as well.
In a holiday fucking street fight fuckfest.
Yep. The holiday hoopla. Thank you guys for tuning in for us this week. We had a nice long show for you, and we will be back next week with a little bit of a Winter is Coming preview, as well as diving more into the C2. So we'll also have our finals for the Women's Tag Tournament. So that'll be cool. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we will catch you guys on the flip side.
Tom Freshly squeezed Orange Cassidy, and I do not have a catchphrase.
Well, we are clam digging. Bloody clam digging.
What happened here?